Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Nice. That's nice. How will you do that, no. Allie? How are you going to convey that?
That's Allie's problem. That's simply Allie's problem. And Allie will have to deal with that. So we were in the middle of a combat. Let's focus ourselves back towards that. And I think, regardless of where we were last time, I want us to step back to the Uhuru itself. The Uhuru is still on the ground, and as far as I understand, still trying to load peat onto the ship. There are pallets of peat which have been covered up by waxed canvas covers to protect them from the rain. Some of this peat has been moved directly up to the ship. The ship itself has been warded against intrusion by the cutting stone. So inside the ship itself, there are no members of the cutting stone that can cross that boundary. However, there's still a lot of peat that needs to be gotten aboard. The furnace still needs to be stoked up to the point where the ship can actually take off. And in the meantime, the crew is under attack from members of the cutting stone who cannot be seen by normal means. So we open underneath sheets of pouring rain as lightning crashes to the ground and briefly lights up the night around the Uhuru. We see the determined faces of sailors from around the ship heaving against the pallets that hold the ship's future, that hold the potential for the Uhuru to take flight once more. The pallets of pitch, of turf, of peat that will burn in the furnace. However, they are also guarded. They have weapons drawn, standing, pointing their blades around them at an unseen enemy that attacks from every angle. I want to know who is playing whom and who's up first.
We have a handful of new people that we have introduced.
That's true.
Does somebody want to take up being like Bowser or Carmen or some of the kind of like kids who recently learned the literal ropes in terms of working on the envelope? I have some notes here of Min 15, she, her, dramatic and moody, who sounds delightful. I think James was playing them before,
yeah.
But I would be amused to be Min.
Yeah, grab Min. I mean, whomever you're grabbing, there's a chance that they will be struck at and attacked by the cutting stone.
Is 15 within the range to be struck at? Are we in teen drama range or are they still a baby?
Tyler was 15 when he started doing all of his things. So I think what we're making as a blanket political statement for the show and every person on the show is if you're 15, it's okay if you die.
And okay to murder.
There's like kids adventure, and then we're in the kind of like teen venture kind of space.
Yeah,
here,
I do want to point out that our all ages podcast, like everybody is like 14 to 15, and like apparently the division between 14 and 15 is like 15, it's okay if you die. It's okay, okay. if you die and are exposed to all of the terrible
15 year olds love The Office. They're okay to get murdered.
Great.
All right. I will take on being Min then.
I would love to be Bowser. I don't know how, but I think it's going to...
Well, I mean, as we've established in one of the recent episodes that came out, Allie just puts in Bowser sound effect.
Great.
So,
great.
You're good.
I love that.
I will describe.
Yeah. I am blank... out of game. I am blanking on some... a kid's name.
So we want more kids.
Victor, who is tall, thin, gangly, and nervous, I also have noted down. We have Granny Softspot, who is was like on the team for kind of re-engineering the ship's direction, I think, under Jonnet.
Granny Softspot was a JPC invention. Like, that's from a while ago.
Jeez. All right, well. Picking up the mantle.
All right, so we have a bunch of peat that needs to be loaded on the ship. What are you doing?
Loaded? Aren't we in the air?
No.
You're not in the air. The furnace isn't even hot enough for the ship to take off yet. And you've got a bunch of, as I established literally, Liz, in the narration that opened this episode, you have pallets of peat waiting to be loaded onto the ship.
I think when the last session was kind of talked to that there was something of a process line of people moving buckets. And that might not be fast enough.
Well, I think the process line was to get the peat up to the furnace, which I think that is faster. But as far as the peat that you need to get into the cargo hold, because let's say you get in the air, it's not going to matter if you get in the air for like an hour and then crash right into the sea.
Min, who is in the line, goes, "This is stupid. We need to go and get more peat onto the ship. Faster or whatever. Hey kid, I have an idea. Can you like do double duty for me or whatever?"
there's one like just big eyed kid right behind the men and like,
"Yeah, okay. I don't think you should be leaving."
And then I assume Min is already gone.
She starts making her way to the aviary on the ship. To try and grab something to move stuff around.
I guess as Min is on their way to the aviary, I guess in the corridor, she like passes Granny Softspot, and Granny Softspot is like,
"You're supposed to be getting the peat on the ship. What are you doing?"
"Whatever, fossil. Keep going."
Whoa!
Min! I've had it up to here with you.
And so at that, Granny very haughtily like trails after Min.
"I'll have you know, I am a contributing member of this ship."
And then like very, very forcefully like clanking down like a cane that she has in her left hand. Mm-hmm. And so it's just like just a tirade punctuated with clink, clink, clink as we get further and further down the hallway.
"I have been on this ship longer than you have. I have seniority. I am a contributing member."
"Yeah, well, if you want to contribute, you can help me move Pete from off the ship onto the ship or whatever."
Granny goes silent for a quick second. He's like,
"Are you sure this will work?"
"Well, they've got to go and move all the poop and the hay on in the aviary, right? So I figure they have, like, I don't know, a wheelbarrow." And you can, like, the sarcasm dribbles from the lips of Min. Like honey.
We see Granny's, like, grip tighten on her cane, and then she takes a breath.
"Well, if there's a wheelbarrow there, then maybe there's also a shovel or two to get the peat into the wheelbarrow faster."
"You think?
Slow down! I'm coming with you."
Yeah. Cool.
All right. It sounds like we've got a plan there, Liz. Sorry.
Up top, Bowser's going at it.
So yeah. Bowser is standing next to a member of the crew who is like, the rain is pouring down. So this guy's like in a long sleeve shirt that like water is like dripping off of his elbows. It's very dark out. So his normally like bright green shirt is harder to see in the darkness. But like when lightning hits, like you can see, he's got his bright green shirt and hat and sort of blue denim overalls that he's wearing. And of course, he's got like thick gloves on each hand. The rain is like very wet and slick on his face, just pouring off of either side of his large mustache. Oh, hurry up, but we got to go.
That's your name, Marco.
There is no need to be so rude. I'm trying to help you. You know that there is nothing more in the world that I would love than to trust you. But after what you have done, and you have only recently passed Gable's crash course in piloting this ship, you tell me that I am supposed to put my life and the crew's life in your big hands? Is this is what you are going to say to me? The same big hands that have struck down my brother, my family, my heart.
Bowser takes off the a hat and shakes his spines free of water that are dripping down his face, and with a mournful look, he looks at this strangely familiar looking
familiar
Italian,
but legally distinct,
legally distinct man.
Not a breach.
This gangly man steps forward towards Bowser, so his nose is almost like in contact with Bowser's nose as he looks up into this man's big and powerful face. As again, lightning strikes behind them.
You will tell me that you are a man who is waiting on his hero moment. Then prove it to me, Bowser. You will take that wheel. You take that wheel and you will make this ship fly into the air. You will show me what kind of man you have become.
And as he said this, he's drawn even closer to Bowser's face. Their lips are nearly touching.
These two. We cut to like two people over, and it's like, these will
rolling
they want
eyes. Oh my god, get a room, am I right?
Hey, listeners, if you want to hear the real dialogue under that, subscribe to the Patreon for a special
piece
of bonus.
That's Patreon exclusive. Allie, you're going to have to clip that and put that in a little bucket for Patreon, because everybody else is getting Bowser noises.
Oh, my God.
Bowser stands straight and turns towards the wheel.
Yeah, and like you could definitely tell Marco was like clearly bracing himself for a kiss, and Bowser turns away. So yeah, that scene goes on. I've heard a lot of plans about things to do with the Pete and characters moving back and forth. It's time for some roles, folks. So it sounds like Bowser is going to more or less try to, because what one of the progress track we have is for the furnace. So Bowser is going to try and man the helm in a way that makes it more efficient for the furnace to take off. So I'm going to want to roll there to see what progress we can make.
What are Bowser's stats?
So this is going to be using the Uhuru Death Chart.
Oh.
So Bowser is, oh, I haven't done the conversions over here yet.
Mm. To metric, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta convert us over to metric real quick. So I'm going to go off the bat. You would be rolling with one white D8 for the crew, for Bowser. Now, you can overcommit Bowser to this task, which will significantly increase his risk, but it will get you another D6.
I will overcommit Bowser for sure.
Okay.
Because of the drop. Huh? Mm. All right. And so a D8 and a D6, right?
Yes.
And I will roll it. An 8 on the 8 and a 3 on the 6.
Okay, so that is, you get an opportunity and a fate. That fate can be used by any member of the crew. I am going to create a little fate pool here just so I can keep track of the crew's fate and remind you. And you get an opportunity that's not necessarily a success at what you are trying to do, but it is a general advantageous good thing that happens. So I'll give you some time to think of that. And a 6 on the 6. Oh, that is another fate. And I have a failure.
That was a 3 on the 6.
Oh, a 3 on the 6. Oh, never mind. So that is a success and a complication, but no fate. You get a flat roll there. So it is time for me to consult the luminaries to see how you did.
Oh.
The Union. All right. This, I think, falls very well in your favor. Let's see, especially because we started this with a romance scene. All right. Fulfillment, harmony, wholeness, love, and community. The Union favors harmony. Where there is a bond, the Union grants strength. This power can stretch beyond any distance or barrier, and souls in the thrall of the Union can find strength even if they are separated by death. However, the bond must be true without selfishness or cynicism in order for this power to work. I kind of feel Bowser has been trying to prove himself to Marco. It sort of feels to me like this does favor a success in this action. Liz, what do you think?
You say it's a success, but not on the thing that we were actually trying to do.
Yeah. Well, so no, this is so you get an opportunity, which that is an extra added benefit that is like adjacent to what you were trying to do, but is not directly. And the luminaries have favored your success. So you will actually get, I will mark a progress off of the ship towards taking off in the furnace. So I'm going to mark that. You also got a complication. So I'm marking a progress track on the storm as well, as the storm is gathering and becoming more intense. But you have made distinct progress towards the ship taking off. I would like you to, I mean, at least in my opinion, I think you could also describe a failure here if you prefer.
No, I think the Bowser succeeds in positioning the wheel and getting the helm together in such a way that we are, whenever we're hot enough, we are able to get going as soon as possible. And I think what that also shakes out to, and you can tell me if that's right or wrong, is that any of our side wings that go in and out are preventing a little bit of cover from rain to keep the peat from being wet.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Okay. Yeah. So basically, I mean, we picture the helm mostly as the ship's wheel,
yes.
But it kind of makes sense to me that there must be also by it levers and whatnot to help in the operation of the side sails that we have described on the ships. And I don't know whether those levers actually control the side sails themselves or if they control signals to like crew below deck that is actually manning and pulling those side sails. But essentially what Bowser does is indicate that those side sails are actually supposed to be flipped up over the deck of the ship to provide as much rain cover as possible
yes.
In this moment.
Yes.
I think that's really cool. So what happened is Bowser turned away from Marco. Marco, you know, stares at this man's back like intensely with his eyes flashing like, again, lightning flashes. We can see his face and like the intensity and passion that is writ across it. And he turns very dramatically and moves over to the line of people working on the furnace. And he grabs a shovel and starts shoveling peat into the furnace. And we can see like the coals and embers working in the furnace reflected in Marco's eyes as he is working in the drenching rain before the rain suddenly slows and Marco looks up and we can see one of the side sails has been flipped to cover like this shovel line by the furnace itself, and he turns back and lightning strikes again. We can just see the silhouette of Bowser at the helm.
Bowser whispers.
Do you have an idea for the opportunity that you rolled?
I would hand that down to the other two.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So that's right. We have this operation down with trying to get the rest of the peat onto the ship with a very surly teenager. So, yeah, is that what has happened that benefits your operation before you have to roll?
Well, aside from whether, assuming that the tools that we're looking for are actually there, I think it's just...
Maybe that's it. The tools that you're looking for happen to be exactly there. You have the right tools.
Yeah. The door to the bird stables. I've been calling it an aviary. I don't know if that's entirely
the aviary
right
is what we call it.
Okay, cool. The door to it is like kicked open entirely unnecessarily. This is the first time that we get a full body shot of Min, and she is, of course, wearing platform strapped up boots. She did not need to kick the door open. The door is not locked.
Yeah, we can see like a very startled Nodos who is saddling up Metatron, like turn around to go,
"Oh, Sovereign's body, you frightened me, Min."
Sorry. Hey. Do you have, like, a wheelbarrow?
I mean, yes. Here, this is what we use to take the feed and dung, you know, obviously between washes back and forth. What are you doing?
Cool. Does not answer the question. Walks over to the wheelbarrow. It smells funny.
I just said it moved bird feed and dung. I don't know what sort of olfactory experience you think that should provide, but it's not great. I can guarantee you that.
Min has this perfect teenager expression of kind of like, I'm embarrassed that I said something that has caused me ridicule, but I'm refusing to express that clearly. Whatever. I'm taking this. The granny's taking a shovel.
You're also taking the shovel. She takes the shovels and puts them in the wheelbarrow. So is there any kind of like, there's got to be like a door that like releases that, you know, we release the birds out on through. What does that sort of look over? If you were to peer to the outside, is there any way that we can like chuck this wheelbarrow outside and just like have it be on the ground so we can load it up with peat?
Yeah, I think so. In? Like the cargo doors to the Uhuru are on the side of the ship. So, you know, those are rolled open. And I have to imagine the bird cages work in a similar way where like, you know, they're barn style doors. They can roll open or close.
Or even, okay. Metatron's being granny turns to Min and like,
do you know how to fly one of these?
And she points to Flea.
Is like, is there a way that we could just have one of the griffins carry the wheelbarrow down?
Okay, now Mr. Gable is very particular about who touches their birds. I really don't think that this is the sort of thing that I can approve of or
Min
just
is
sit by.
Like patting the side of Flea, eyes sparkling. They're really cool. I wasn't allowed to fly one unsupervised, but this is like Desperate Measures or whatever.
Min being a teenage girl with problems, and Flea being a beast that you ride upon, there's an instant connection forged between the two of them. Allie, you are gonna have to set off that horse girl alarm for sure, because that's the situation that we're in.
Yeah, we see a shot of Min reflected in Flea's eyes. Cool.
Absolutely. Granny turns to Nodos and,
I know you have rank on E, but I have age on you, and this child needs to get down onto the land post-haste.
Okay, I will be 100% honest with you. I'm supposed to load up this bird because I've got a cool fight that I'm going to get to be a part of,
then
and
why aren't
I'm
you
really
doing
excited
why aren't
for
you doing
that.
It? Why aren't you doing it?
Yeah, why aren't you doing it, Nodos?
Okay, make sure that the bird gets back in the roost. All right? I just make sure it gets back. I can't get in trouble for this. I'm not taking the fall for this.
Granny turns to Min and is like,
make sure that this way your bird gets where it needs to go. I don't think it would be wise for me to join you. I would evaporate on the first flap of wings.
I almost thought you were cool, but okay.
And that hits Granny. and we get she turns around and we get like a completely different, like moody, low-key lighting setup for Granny. Is like where she just like remembers her the days gone by of her like jousting and being a corsair in her own light, in her own story, just killing whoever, fucking whoever, just being the height of her true self, and then comes back and is like,
strap me in,
and she goes and hops on behind Min.
Okay. So it sounds to me like we have an NPC role where two NPCs have been committed to this task. You are also enlisting the help of a bird. So I am going to say you are going to be rolling with one white D12 one white D6.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I am going to say you're going to be rolling with one white D12 one white D6.
Let me go get that D12. Here's one and a D6. That is a 4 on the D6 and a 3 on the D12.
All right. So I rolled 4 complications for you. You rolled an opportunity, but you also got a fate. So I have added that to the pool of fate that can be accessed by the crew. But there was no hard success or failure here, which means we turn once again to the luminaries.
While you're
to
pulling
decide.
That luminary, can you remind me what we can spend fate to do?
Fate can be used to upgrade roles before you make them. Yes. You can also use it to activate abilities. Technically, the crew of the Uhuru doesn't have any abilities that we've established for them, so they're mostly about upgrading dice.
That's fine.
This point.
Gotcha.
And I drew the changeling, which is yearning, impulse, will, and transformation.
Impulse and will, you say?
Yeah, I do think these favor a teenager going on a horse girl journey pretty well. So I feel like this is a success. You did roll a bunch of complications, though, so that advances the storm quite a bit. And it advances it to an interesting and really tense point, actually, as I'm going to mark off this. So the storm has now advanced by 5 slots, which I have written down here. The river swells high, which adds to the strength of the cutting stone. So now I'm going to upgrade the cutting stone's ability to attack. Basically, what happens across the island, right now we have the Rusalka. The Rusalka is trying to contain the cutting stone as per the agreement with the crew of the Uhuru. Mm-hmm. And we can see this river that is now like essentially cutting this island in half. And the Rusalka has grabbed hold of this river and sealed it away from the cutting stone as per her agreement. However, very quickly, the river starts branching and these deltas start to emerge. And from those, much fewer, but members of the cutting stone start moving out. So the Rusalka is grabbing hold of the rivers kind of as they come into existence. However, the cutting stone are forcing so many new rivers to appear that members slip through even as the Rusalka stops them and grabs control. They are currently fighting for ways to get onto this island right now. However, this is a successful action. So Flea is hooked up to a harness and the doors are rolled open to the Uhuru. I want to know how is Min trying to... Now, this is Min. This is Minnie Singleton. or is this a different person altogether?
The note that I have down is that the character was Min, but it might be it might have been short for Minnie Singleton at the time. I don't know.
I guess there's the only way to know would be to remember the things that we have done before.
I'm pretty sure this
impossible.
Is a separate person that you just, but you did invent Minnie Singleton again.
I found some old notes and it's just like Minnie Singleton, Ned, Victor, and then Min.
Okay, so Min is a separate person. Yeah. Great. All right.
Just a lot of sour 15-year-old girls out of the
Uhuru, I think. There is a big freewheeling like bank as it loops round to go back down to the earth. And we get like a when a roller coaster passes by a camera and takes a shot of the people in the front row, or like those bits and pieces where there's been speedster characters in movies and we get a shot of their face as the rest of the world is kind of running super fast by them, of both Min and Granny Softspot, their expressions probably similar, actually. As being flung round and then next to, with a surprising amount of careful landing, Flea knows what it's doing, next to the kind of like pile of peat with the kind of equipment already harnessed to Flea, so we can immediately disentangle that and start loading.
Excellent. Okay. That will put the Uhuru in great position to load up this peat. Now I turn to the cutting stone, as there are members of the Uhuru crew who are desperately trying to get this peat loaded aboard the ship, and the cutting stone attacks from all angles. So I'm going to roll an attack here, and yes, that does hit. So it's time for me to roll on the death chart and see what damage is done.
Wow.
Red is going to be 10s here. So we get a 31 on the death chart, which, okay. So I have established that inside the ship is safe. A question to you, because I want to be honorable about how this goes forward. Above deck of the ship, I think, is still at threat. Mainly because that Yeah, it would be wild if we just made the whole exercise not dangerous. So everybody who is above deck is also under threat.
Mm-hmm.
Because 31 on the Uhuru death chart is Carlos.
Oh.
Carlos moves down a hit point. Now, Carlos had more than one hit point, mm-hmm. Being a character that Nathan controls and pretty important to the ship at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan, I would like for you to describe for me a near-death experience that Carlos has at the hands of the Cutting Stone. Without special tools that have not been revealed, they are not going to be able to see the Cutting Stone coming at them. What does this look like?
Cool. I already know. I think we see Carlos in the process of trying to get the fire hotter and going. And there is heat emerging from here, but it's not enough to kind of get the ship up in the air. But suddenly Carlos feels cold despite the increasing inferno in the furnace and a presence behind them. And that gets them, initially they wave it off as kind of, don't bother me, this is important. But the overwhelming chill stays and eventually they turn round just in time for the gust of air, that is the air moving behind almost like a sickle or a scythe that can't be seen. And leaning back ever so slightly, it slices through the bridge of Carlos's goggles. Ooh. And revealing both one very tired eye and a flower in the other socket.
What?
Whoa, a flower socket?
Pardon?
Yeah,
character back development.
In the, we get a brief flashback to the Forest Queen's lair, where one of the rules of the Forest Queen's lair is that you cannot escape via the air. You cannot leave by climbing up. And Carlos tried, and pollen kind of invaded the air around them. And it settled. It settled within Carlos. And they had not said anything about it.
Wow.
Carlos, no. Wow.
A bunch of blood red lycorices kind of like has bloomed in Carlos's right eye.
Oh, that's so sick. That's so cool.
Oh my God.
This is still a horror comedy podcast.
I'm about to say, Nathan, bring in the shit that will scar you.
Carlos breathes heavily, realizing that if they were leaned in, if they didn't react, that would have cleanly sliced their face open. I think then there is an emergency slam on the wall from Carlos, and a gout of flame rips from the furnace outwards and passes, and nothing else happens in the space anymore. Carlos has no idea whether it got the thing or whether it decided to kind of move away after that attack since it had been discovered.
I think a gout of flame like that, maybe it reveals the fact that a cutting stone is there to people who cannot see.
In a cloud of ash gushes from the furnace, and it sits in the outline of a ghostly figure.
And here's the thing, Carlos, that now that you have added this detail to Carlos, again, I think that the cutting stone cannot be seen by normal means. However, the fact that you have a flower in the socket of your eye, I feel like through that, you can more clearly see. And maybe that was the thing that allowed you the indication that you needed to react or move. It is clear to Carlos that the cutting stone is aboard the ship. You can see like the ghostly silvery lanterns of other cutting stones who are climbing up the surface of the ship to get on the top deck of the Uhuru.
They're here. I need to keep working, but I need assistance immediately.
I think it's time for us to cut over to Oromar, Jonnet, and Gable in front of the Rusalka, who is now commanding her power over the rivers that are forming on this island.
Our deal is struck, Orimar Vale. I will assist you getting off this island if you in turn assist me in retrieving feathers being held by the Church of the Slain God.
An accord has been struck. But for now, I must take my leave. My crew need me.
Then I suggest you return to them safely.
Orimar turns to Gable. It's raining now, and has been raining quite for a while. And he looks at the palm of his hand, the falconer's glove on it connected to his jacket. He is wearing the featherweave embroidered coat. But in this rain, it's impossible to use the lighter, even if he brought a block of wood or something to kind of heat, start the heating process. There's no way it would catch flame.
Gable.
Yeah?
And he swings the gloved hand to you like you would kind of catch in a, yeah, we're tough lads, like class high five.
The boys.
Yeah. Do you catch the glove?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Gable, I'm going to need you to burn for me.
Gable immediately catches his meaning. The whole thing?
Just the hand. Unfortunately, under my current state, if you radiate too hot, I might not survive.
All right. John, if you want to step back a little bit, thank you.
John, it starts backpedaling very, very delicately.
Yep, yeah, uh-huh. Fire away.
I just want to see how big of a fire we can make, because fire is probably good no matter what. So if I make a big one, then that'll help. But if I make a small one, that'll help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't know. What are my numbies?
I think the difficulty of this is going to be one high stakes die, just because we're in a high stakes situation. But this sounds like a magic roll to me.
Yeah. Well, I've got 4d4 or 4d8 on magic. So let's see how it goes.
4d8 for reals?
Yeah. I put everything in.
I don't have anything else.
All right. So that is a 7, 7, 7, and 4.
All right.
Three sevens. So. Well, it can only be lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It looks like it is. 7, 7, 7, and 4. Liz, that is 6 successes and an opportunity. I will say I did roll 1 failure against you, so it's only 5 successes for this fire. And there is a complication to cancel out your opportunity and a spare complication. So that does go towards the storm getting more intense steadily and slowly. However, Liz, describe for me a 5 success fire. What does this look like?
Oh, golly. It's so wet. It's hard to know.
So this is definitely divine fire, which has been described in the past as gold and silver flames. Mm-hmm. I gotta think that means that it probably behaves differently around water than other fire. I kind of feel like an angel, like smiting a ship or something. You could definitely make the surface of water catch fire if you wanted. This is a remarkably powerful and successful spell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think the way that it shakes out then is everywhere there is river. I think Gable didn't put a lot of effort into focusing this, so it was just they snapped the glove and just tried to see what would happen. That little spark, and then everything around them, all the water around them, kind of went up like gasoline. And then,
oh yeah,
once that fire started really going, Gable like swipes it with the glove and sort of like dangles it back to Orimar, like, is that what he wanted?
I think the heat as it lands in Orimar's palm is, you know, hot to humans. And you can see that he's trying to not kind of yelp from how hot this is.
I am going to say Here's what I'm going to do with this, because I like this, and this is a very successful role. So we see flames pour across all of the branches of the river that's on this island. Like in a bird's eye shot, suddenly there is this bright gold and silver line that like shoots across the island in the shape of all of these branching and emerging rivers, that it has caught fire to this glove itself. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say divine flames feel hot based on the amount of sin that you are carrying in your person and the things that you have done wrong in your life. So, I mean, Orimar being a pirate, there's probably a goodly amount of heat in there, but like... That's what's happening. And it's not like it burns your flesh.
Mm.
It's not a physical danger to you necessarily.
It's a sense of agony that radiates from it. Yeah.
But yeah, it does fucking hurt a lot.
Mm-hmm. And you see his face contort with pain and he bites his lip to not yell. It hurts. And as... you can see the pain wash over him. Equally, you can see the thin gold thread that is woven in to his coat pulse in golden light. The tail of the coat starts to kind of ripple as if caught by an updraft.
Gable whispers to John, oh, that is so cool.
Thank you.
That's so cool.
Nobody does it like the captain.
Thank you, Gable.
So kind of cool.
After that action, the cutting stone that has made its way onto the island begins to circle in on your small group. Rusalka, now engaged with sealing them out from finding new ways onto the island, is not able to combat them herself. Also, any sin carried within her soul is currently being measured against the judging flames that Gable has poured across her river, which, you know, who knows if she's going to have something to say about that later. I think she does let out a scream of agony as well. But
it's
the
more
cutting
about
stone...
self-perception than anything. You forgive yourself, it'll be easier.
The cutting stone moves around your group, and they draw their knives. I need everybody to roll a die in defense. The way that I think I'm having defense work in this game is you base have a D6 to defend yourself, a white D6. If you are committing any efforts to it, you know, you can spend into it to turn it into a D8, or you can even upgrade it to a second D8. Mm-hmm. But it can only ever be a maximum of two D8s in defense.
Mm-hmm. If we're going over how we want to increase our die, I will want to spend... 1 point of finesse. Mm-hmm. Oh, our point spends refresh each session, yeah?
Right now, if you spent things last session, they are still spent.
They're still
we
there.
Are still okay. Part of the same combat. Also, nice. I want to point out to Liz and Tyler, you are also rolling defense right now because the Cutting Stone are attacking you as well. Skyjacks. We return once again to the long line of prospective applicants standing in front of the skyship Uhuru. Someone steps off that line, approaches the table of audition reviewers, puts down headshots, resumes, and takes his seat on a stool. He is a short man with thick, dark, coarse hair. He's got a very thick beard and even thicker eyebrows that obscure his deep-set eyes at a distance. He's wearing a red flannel shirt that is half open to reveal a hairy chest.
Great.
Hello. And he smiles widely to reveal a tooth that is missing and has been replaced by a bit of well-shaped iron wood.
Wow. Only one tooth missing. Okay. All right. How's it going, sir?
Jealous.
Jonnert reaches out his hand to give him a handshake.
Beautiful day. Beautiful day. Thank you very much. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet you.
What's your name,
happy
sir?
Happy to be here. My name is Gregor. To warn you, I do have a nickname, a bit of a nom de guerre. It's less professional than Gregor, so I'm more than happy to continue the interview being called Gregor. But
right.
If this is a casual environment, I'd be happy to tell you my nickname, my nom de guerre, and we could continue the interview that way, a bit more casual and comfortable, whatever you'd prefer.
It feels like a bit of a surprise reveal. And to be honest, after having met the last handful, I could do with a bit of drama today. So why don't we put a pin in that, and then maybe we'll be able to guess as we go. Also, we have a member in our crew named Spit. So to be honest.
Oh, wow. Casual already.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. That's a bit. So that's very casual work environment there.
What are you trying to do when you join the ship? What's your role that you're gunning for?
Well, sir, I'm a shipwright. I am a carpenter. I love to work with wood. I feel very comfortable with that. Been doing it for many years. I work at the logwood camps. Been doing a bit of lumberjacking for a long time. So
clearly,
very comfortable there. But it is my passion. Wood is my passion. Working with wood is my passion. I'm very good at identifying different species and fibers of woods, knowing how to get the best out of whatever I'm working with. So I'd say dedicated worker, hard worker. I am casual about it because it is what I care about most.
Gotcha.
Hence the tooth, innit? I guess you made your own tooth. Turning immediately to Gable, what's the odds that the name is about wood?
I was just about to say, I was going to congratulate us so much that we didn't say a thing. We reacted in the most appropriate workplace way for the things that he said. And I just want to give us all a good congratulations.
I am proud of us.
What if it, hey, if any further bait happens, let's not take it. Let's see what happens.
All right.
Let's see if this is just a normal fella.
I'm sure if Travis is just itching somewhere, screaming and he doesn't know why. Anyway,
his hands are on fire.
Turning back. So your tooth was your own custom work then, eh?
So not much in the way of dentists out here, eh? So
no.
we pretty much just have what we got to work with.
The way that you describe that, I'm curious. I have to ask. So do you spend a lot of time with wood in your mouth, dentistry aside?
Okay, so I guess here's the truth coming out. So now I know I described the way I work with wood as casual.
Uh-huh.
I would say I described it as almost extremely casual in certain circumstances.
Yes.
Right.
It's not that I don't have woodworking tools. I do.
Okay.
To be honest, they don't interest me. I don't see the challenge. I don't see the reward in woodworking to be working with the tools, you see.
Okay.
Right. Where is this going to land?
I hope it doesn't
most of my woodworking with my teeth and mouth. Now,
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I prefer to do it in private. It's not a public thing, okay? This is something that I do in private. So I would cordon off. You give me a couple weeks, I'd build myself my own shed within the ship, privately back there. I'd be gnawing at whatever boards and planks we need to work, eh?
Okay.
Okay, so that's not going to be a problem. People aren't going to be seeing it. I'm not going to be bothering people with it. And I know most people have a follow-up question immediately, so I'll answer that right away. Yes, I do have different sets of teeth for different jobs that I might need to be doing with them that I just slide in. These are my casual teeth. These are my interview teeth. Most of those sets of teeth are ironwood. Yes, so if there were a fire situation, again, you wouldn't have to worry. My teeth would not be a fire hazard in that circumstance.
Yeah.
But I am going to be doing a lot of the woodworking with my mouth.
Okay.
We've had a lot of staff members with, shall we say, privacy issues. So the fact that you're willing to do your work behind closed balsa wood doors is appreciated. Sounds like you're a bit of an eager beaver.
That's a very soft wood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Replace as many stuff as we do. You learn to work with the barest of materials, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, then.
I don't think bear is the issue here, Jonnet.
Jonnet, you go, because if I start asking questions, I'm not going to stop.
Okay, all right. Well, I just... So, to be clear, if you would be so kind as to give us a show us your teeth again, and...
So he does smile a bit wider, like the wiry hairs on his face, like move out of the way. And you can see teeth a lot of them are supplemented with wood. There are some natural teeth remaining, but they've been worn down after years and years of gnawing and chewing away at different types of wood.
And these are your interview teeth. This is your best foot forward teeth.
This is my best foot forward teeth. Again, okay. You know, I've been caught out in pretty remote places. It took a long time to even get ironwood out here. Yeah, a lot of what we have to work with up here, or down here, I should say, is pine. So,
mm-hmm. Okay. So,
you can imagine.
Okay. I'm going to, I have a question, a comment, and a guess. Question. Because it seems like this is just part of the subtraction part of woodworking, the adhesion and creation. I would have questions about what you can do with
the mouth. Well, that's the interesting thing about woodworking. Oh, no. A lot of people imagine that you need to use a lot of screws and bolts out of iron. If you get your joins right, you know, it's all wood to wood. It's all wood to wood. Just natural shapes that you've carved in so that they fit each other nice and snug.
Mm-hmm. And the comment... This doesn't seem, and pardon my phrasing, you say it's casual. This doesn't seem sensual for you. This just seems like an internal sort of natural impulse that...
Well, yeah, I'd say almost instinctual for sure.
Instinctual. Yeah. All right.
Not a sensual thing, I'd say.
No. I'm going to circle us up. All right. So my guess... I'm going to, we can go around and make our equivalent guesses and we'll see who's right. I think this person is a secret beaver.
Well, I mean, I also, you know, I was picking up beaver vibes, of course. And, you know, so I guess I'm throwing my vote behind secret beaver as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I gotta commend everybody on the panel. I feel like you seen through me, you know me. That nom de guerre is the beaver. I have been called. It is related to how I work with wood. So,
to be honest, I was expecting so much worse.
I know.
Yeah. I have one more question before I throw you a big old thumbs up. Because we love craftsmen here on the Uhuru.
We do.
What do you think the remaining shelf life on this on your woodworking set of teeth are? Because, you know, they're in a lot of different states of worn downedness, and like it might be hard to find new ironwood. So, like, what's the lifespan that you got on the set that you have right now?
Well, that largely depends on the type of wood that I'm going to be working with. You know, if you got a hardwood, a board that's like, you know, say a black walnut or a mahogany, something like that, that'll wear out my teeth right quick, you know. but if we're working with your softer woods, again, your pines or especially your balsas, a good set of chompers can last me quite a bit of time.
Okay.
I do believe we have a solid apprenticeship available for you if you are willing to work under our key members of staff as a bit of a trial period. I do believe we have something available for you, mate.
Well, then, I would be honored. I'd be honored to get some Uhuru wood in my mouth for sure.
Okay.
You and a whole bunch of other people, as far as I understand.
You know what's happening.
What a perfect fit. All right. Good to meet you.
Get on board.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at @CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing.
In the universe of Star Wall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Star Wall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjack's role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Star Wall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Tyler is on strike alongside his fellow members of the WGA and SAG-AFTRA. You can support Tyler and other striking artists by contributing to the Entertainment Community Fund, linked in our show notes. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT. Or streaming at twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him over on Twitter at Arnie Parrott or on his website, ATP Tunes. This episode was edited by Ali Grauer, who can be found on Twitter at @DreamsToBecome, or on her podcast, Skyjack's Courier's Call. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at @Lunarum. The world of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show was made in part by using a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals. There are no kings. Take flight.
Health to the strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.